Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Dearing. I told you at the top of the hour that we anticipate having Mayor Marty Walsh. We also are looking forward to speaking with Congresswoman Catherine Clark. In this minute-by-minute unfolding world, circumstances are keeping them both from us for the next little bit. So we will get to them. But in the meantime, we've been lucky enough that Dr. Benjamin Linus, infectious disease physician and associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at Boston University School of Medicine, is willing to join us now despite his own schedule. And it sounds like Dr. Joshua Barocas of Boston Medical Center and the BU School of Medicine has also agreed to join us now. I really appreciate both of you being on the line. Thank you.
Sure, my pleasure.
Sure, not a problem.
So listeners, let's take your calls. What's on your mind about the coronavirus this week? I know you know we've been doing these calls for a while. It's time. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Dr. Linus, I'm going to start with you. Just quickly, how are you and what's the world around you looking like right this minute?
I am okay. I'm personally fine. I'm socially isolated at my house, working very hard via Zoom meetings, phone calls, and it's a constant multimedia world at this point. We're still in full court press at the hospital, nailing down our protocols and starting to see a flux of patients. And I think, you know, last week was a week of a lot of fast work trying to get ourselves prepared. I'm not willing to say we're 100% prepared ever for something as unknown and new as this epidemic, but I think that we're in good shape and we're rolling up our sleeves and getting to work.
Dr. Barocas, what would you add to that?
Well, not a whole lot else. When I have gone out, and yes, I am doing fine too, for my family that may or may not be listening. What I would say is I've been out when I have to go to the hospital. I was at the hospital this weekend. I'm encouraged to see that the streets are a lot more empty. Still, there are people driving around, and I'm going to assume at this point that it's the essential personnel, and that there's a very good reason that people have to be on the streets. But I will say that it's not the same Boston that I've seen in the past.
And that's a good thing, as painful as it is, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We want people, and clearly with the governor's stay in place order today, or advisory. Today, everyone is on board in saying that really, in order to get in control of the epidemic here in Massachusetts and throughout at least the country, and hopefully the world very soon, we need people to really, really do their best to stay at their house. You know, I know that technology is not accessible to everyone, and that Zoom meetings are not necessarily how everyone can communicate, but as best as humanly possible, we really want you to stay within your small little perimeter.
So, Dr. Go ahead, please. Dr. Linus,
go ahead. Well, I just wanted to reiterate that because I think it's one of the most important points right now. Really, stay home. If you don't need to be out, stay home. I know that all of us have those little decisions every day. Can I do this? Should I be doing that? The answer is no. Unless it's truly essential, you shouldn't be doing it right now. Those little social visits that seem harmless, try to avoid them as best as you can and really focus on things that are truly essential, like feeding yourself and going to a doctor.
Okay, Drs. Linus and Barocas, I'm going to start turning to calls now. I want to let you know when Congresswoman Clark has a break in her leadership call. We're going to break from this for a few minutes to have our opportunity to speak with her. There's a great deal going on in Congress today, and then we will come back to you again. I appreciate
Absolutely.
Your patience with this. So we've got Bruce on the line from Newburyport. Bruce, go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm an RN. I've been a nurse for 25 years. Critical care experience in my past, like 8 years of it. And I've been very frustrated. For the last month, I've been trying to get a hold of institutions, hospitals in the area, in Boston, through agencies, to say, hey, I want to help. And I hit a stone wall. There seems to be some obstacle to getting, and obviously there's a huge need for this for me.
So you'd like to come to work in the city, Bruce. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So, yeah, and I call, I apply, I email, I network. I'm hitting a stone wall. I would think there should be some mechanism
Let's find out about that.
Come out of retirement.
Yeah, let's find out about that. That's a great point, Bruce. And I want to turn to Dr. Josh Barocas on this. Barocas, you're at Boston Medical Center. Are there people reaching out? Do you have the capacity and the need to hire additional people, people who are retired, people who have been out of the workforce, et cetera?
Well, first of all, Bruce, your offer is heard and is very much appreciated. We are actively right now, at least at our hospital, we are fully staffed, and we have across the state have been developing. I know that plans have been in development as far as what to do about capacity. And I do know that there are a number of ways that people can donate their time and help work. We're still getting, there's, I'm sure, a lot of logistics as far as, you know, liability and some of the nitty-gritty things that have to be worked out. And I can't necessarily speak to what exactly that timeline is, but we hear you and we want your help too, and we're going to need it. So just keep pressing, and we'll get you when we can.
All right, let's take another call. We've got Joan on the line down on the Cape in Sandwich. Joan, go ahead.
Yes, I've wondered for a little bit of time now. The virus must be being carried on money, paper money, coins. Wouldn't that be true?
It's a great question, Joan. Dr. Linus.
I'm sorry, my connection dropped out. Can you repeat that question
briefly?
That's
okay. Joan was calling from the Cape to ask if she should be concerned that the infection can be transferred on coins and paper money.
So this is a some version of this question is common. Can I get the infection from X? I've heard people call me, friends, family, around food delivery, produce, coinage. I think it's really important when we think about this to draw the distinction between something that is physically possible and what's actually happening and what's actually driving the epidemic in the real world now. What's driving the epidemic is clusters of people who live together and are in close contact who have transmission that way. It's generally not from vectors like money that are circulating through the population. So that's why we're saying stay at home, right? And that's why we're trying to get people to not go and have large, you know, large gatherings where they can spread the virus. I think that it always makes sense to wash hands. Whenever in doubt, wash hands. But I don't want to get out there that a main vector driving this epidemic is our money. Money is always dirty, right? We tell our kids that. Don't put the coins in your mouth, et cetera. But money's not what's driving the epidemic.
So I want to put the number out again for callers, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to call in with your question. Before we take the next call, Dr. Barocas, there was a report in the New York Times suggesting that doctors are recommending people who have lost their sense of smell and taste be tested because anecdotally that seems to be some kind of hallmark sign of the illness. Can you comment on that?
We've heard those anecdotes. I was actually talking with a colleague of mine about this yesterday, and there is some anecdotal evidence to suggest that this is a clinical feature. But before we spark sort of mass needing to be tested, I think that it's really, really important that, one, there are a lot of reasons that people can lose their sense of smell, at least temporarily, in the setting of a cold or virus that doesn't necessarily have to do with this coronavirus. The other part of this is, instead of rushing to the hospital, which we don't want you to do, especially if you're asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic, the best thing to do is call your doctor first. If your doctor doesn't know the answer right off the top of his or her head, then they have ways to speak with people at each one of the hospitals to see what the latest recommendations are. And I think that Dr. Fauci made a very, very good point the other day during a press conference, Dr. Fauci being the director of one of the institutes of the NIH, and said, you know, we're combing through a lot of anecdotal evidence right now. But our job is also to determine what part of that evidence is actually true and which one and would hold up in a randomized trial. And the other part is to say, we're going to this just seems to be an anomaly, and it may not be totally connected. We don't have enough evidence right now to suggest either which way.
All right, Drs. Barocas and Linus, I'm going to ask you to hang on. Thanks so much for taking these listener calls. Listeners, you hang on, too. We do now have Congresswoman Catherine Clark on the line, and I'm going to turn to a brief conversation with her. Congresswoman Catherine Clark is from the 5th District and is vice chair of the House Democratic Caucus. Congresswoman, I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble with that one today. Congresswoman Clark, welcome.
Oh, Tiziana, nice to be with you.
I appreciate you taking time out. I know it's busy. The Senate failed to advance a stimulus bill for the second time just earlier today. I know over in the House, Democratic leaders are just now unveiling another stimulus proposal. So where are we in Congress today?
Well, the way I see it is we have the House Democrats trying to put together a very strong bill that reflects what we're hearing from our communities, that small businesses and mid-sized businesses need our help, and that we have so many workers who are finding themselves unemployed or a great reduction in hours, and yet the bills are still mounting. And we have to get relief to them quickly. And what we're seeing in the response from Mitch McConnell's bill in the Senate simply does not get the job done. We need to put an emphasis on workers and small businesses, and their bill is instead focused on creating a $500 billion fund that would be administered by the Trump administration at their discretion to help bail out larger corporations, leaving the workers of America behind.
So, Congresswoman, based on what you just said, there's a really big gap between the agenda that you're laying out and the agenda that you're saying the GOP and the Senate is laying out. Ultimately, Congress has to come up with something that the House, the Senate, and the president will agree on. What is it going to take to get there and get there quickly?
Yeah, the glaring gap here is that the Senate is not focusing on the needs of American families. And I think that what you are seeing from Senate Democrats is that they will not vote for something that is basically more corporate giveaways without protections for workers and taxpayers. So we are going to need the Senate to reevaluate the way it's been doing business for the last 3 years and focus again on the people that we are elected to serve. I can tell you I have heard from people across Massachusetts and across my district. My neighbor told me about her son who was laid off as a chef. His wife managed a restaurant. She was also laid off. And they have a 2-year-old and a 9-year-old autistic child. These people need our help. They need expanded unemployment. They need to make sure they can continue to pay their bills. And they need to make sure that they will have health insurance that will pay for treatment for coronavirus in the terrible situation that they need it. So we are imploring that the Senate and House Republicans take stock that this is about the American people in a time of great challenge and dire need, and we have to focus away from the large corporations and back onto our main streets and how we support the businesses and people who have lost jobs in this public health crisis.
So, Congresswoman, arguably, this is really the first time since 1918 that we're facing a level of pandemic. So there's not a lot of precedent in the last 100 years for the role of Congress in a moment like this. What would you say is Congress's job right now?
Our job is to support our local and state responders. It's those first responders. It's our doctors and nurses and folks who are our healthcare workers and EMTs who are dealing with this upfront. And our job is to make sure that we are using the funding of the federal government to support the best way that we can protect those healthcare workers, that we can get them the basics they need, like protective equipment. We've heard so much about surgical masks and gowns. And in the federal government, we have to make sure that they get that. And we have to hold the administration accountable. We cannot have states bidding against the federal government for this equipment. The federal government and this administration needs to be state partners so that we can protect those healthcare workers. And so that's our role. Our role is to support the very real work that is going on in our communities to keep people healthy and safe.
And how can you, what can you do in the next few days, both with the administration and inside of Congress itself, to drive up availability of personal protective equipment, maybe put more pressure on the president for the Defense Production Act, if you think that that's a necessary step? What are the things to do in the short term to drive up the supports for first responders that you're saying are the top priority and the top job of Congress right now?
Yeah, we need to give the hospitals and health institutions the desperately needed funds to provide treatment and care. And they need that equipment. Not only do we need to fund it, the House is looking at considerable more funding for it, but we do need the president to invoke the Defense Production Act immediately. He has signed it, and I think this is a confusing point to some people. He did sign it, but he has not invoked it. And we need to have businesses switching their manufacturing, which can't be done overnight, to start to produce ventilators, to make sure that we are making all the protective gowns and masks that our healthcare workers are going to need. Part of this is just keeping that force, that particular healthcare workforce, healthy so they are able to treat the patients that are presenting. Locally, we are looking at working with universities and colleges to provide special dormitories so healthcare workers can live there and not possibly expose their families. But this all needs an administration and a president who is saying, I am going to act now, because every day that we lose increases the chances of Americans dying.
I want to shift gears for just a minute. Congresswoman, more and more members of the House and Senate are self-quarantining. There's even been hospitalization. Representative Ben McAdams of Utah is now in the hospital with COVID-19. Senator Rand Paul has tested positive. Amy Klobuchar's husband is hospitalized. Several other senators are in self-isolation. It raises this question of, could we be headed toward a constitutional crisis if the House and Senate can't act as fewer and fewer members are available on the floor to vote?
I think that we have to look at contingency planning. Jim McGovern, our chairman of the Rules Committee, is putting together a report that on options for us for remote voting and how that would work. But, we have to take the precautions that all Americans are taking, use the social distancing, wash our hands, stay home if we're sick. But at this moment, I don't think that we are in a situation where Congress cannot come together and, we still would be able to have quorums and do the work that we need to do. But we may have to change how we do it so that we're not all on the House floor at once as we usually are, but that we come in alphabetically. We can extend hours for voting until we can have some other protocols in place in case we need them. But for right now, I don't think that people should worry about that. Congress will be able to come and get a robust package done for the American people.
As we have potentially a healthcare crisis unfolding, it's clear we also have an economic crisis unfolding. As a public leader and an elected official, how do you think about the balance between the public health dimensions, the economic dimensions, and when those things are pitted against each other in terms of representing the best interests of the American people?
Well, we know that this particular economic crisis is driven by a public health crisis. And as you said, we haven't really seen that fortunately, since 1918. But they are so tied together, I'm not sure that we can separate them. But we know we have to do everything we can to encourage people to, you know, remain inside, stay at home as much as you can so that we will not overwhelm our healthcare system. And we have to have dual priorities, and that is supporting the healthcare system and those first responders and workers, and make sure they have the equipment they need to stay safe and support patients in having access to insurance to make sure that they can get a test for free and that they can get treatment. Those are crucial. But going with that, we know that the social distancing has caused such a disruption to our economy that at the same time, it is equally important that we support families and that we make sure that they have the money available to keep the health insurance, meet the basic necessities of their families. And I think we're going to see a lot of push for waivers of eviction proceedings, you know, moratorium on foreclosures, and a lot of small business loans and grants to make sure they can keep their payrolls going and make sure those insurance payments proceed as well. So I don't think we can prioritize one over the other. We have to do both at the same time. And if we are successful, we will allow people to have the social distancing we need to slow the spread of this virus and allow us to start the economy up again.
Last question for you, Congresswoman, and I know it's a hard one in a short period of time. We've got about 30 seconds left. Sort of what's your message to a hurting American people and a hurting people of the Commonwealth during this time of real challenge?
You know, I am always inspired by what I have seen of people coming together, being very selfless about how they are approaching this, and that this self staying at home, isolating is hard, but it really makes a difference. And I think that people understand it. And I also want people to know that, you know, in the House of Representatives, we see you. We see the pain that people are in. We see the fear and anxiety. And we're going to get this done. We are going to get real protections put forward. And this isn't going to be the last bill. We are going to continue to work on the economic and health supports we need to get the American people through this. And we're a strong nation, and we come together in these times of great challenge. And I am always just inspired by the acts of kindness and courage that I'm witnessing in response to the coronavirus.
Congresswoman Catherine Clark, she represents the Massachusetts 5th District, also vice chair of the House Democratic Caucus. I know it's a busy day. Thanks for taking time out for Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, we will return to Drs. Linus and Barocas with more of your calls. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tiziana Dearing. This is Radio Boston.